Tapes and Scouts, a podcast where two friends review every single movie they watch.
Max. Are we doing a Friday the 13th? Do you have any Friday the 13th?
I don't, actually. I don't. I just was feeling it.
Oh, okay.
I really just enjoy doing weird things during these openings.
I am always surprised.
Cambodia. Let's talk about Cambodia for a minute.
And how great they are.
They love us, and I don't know why, but thank you, Cambodia.
Ooh, this drink's for you, Cambodia.
This one's for you, Cambodia. Back on your charts again in our category. You love us, and we love you too. We'll come visit you. Well, not soon. So
probably not soon. Probably not soon. With the whole pandemic, but
yeah, we're not trying to bring you any illnesses or anything.
No,
but we'll come see you later.
Yeah,
we'll bring Sam.
Yeah, I think she'd come.
I think Sam would go. I think she's all about the Cambodia.
Yeah, probably.
I think so. So Max,
Tim,
you've done two movies. I've done two movies, and quite frankly, I don't know who should go first.
Well.
I don't know if you've got good stuff. I don't know if you've got bad stuff.
Well, do we want the podcast to end on a high note or a low note is always the question.
Is it going to matter? We could roll the dice.
No, I'll go first.
Oh, yes.
Because I got a movie that's worth talking about.
All right.
2007's The Mist.
Ooh, The Mist.
The Mist.
I've seen this.
Oh, it's so good.
It's quite good.
I watched it back in the July of 2020. It is 2 hours and 6 minutes long, so a little long for a horror sci-fi movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's directed by the great Frank Darabont, and it's got the Thomas Jane, the Laurie Holden, the Marcia Gay Harden. I mean, a whole bunch of people in this one. Jeffrey DeMunn is in here, of course. William Sadler, my favorite.
Ah, there he is. Yeah. There he is. I waited.
Yep. So this is a pretty good one. It is a movie about a seemingly deadly mist that traps a group of small town residents in a local grocery store.
They're very fortunate that that's where they got trapped.
I think so. Of all the places you could try, like maybe like a Walmart would be a little bit better.
Sure.
But this is a small town. They don't have Walmart.
Right.
That's up the road.
That's up the road.
Up the road.
Yeah. Where the Walmart civilized is. Town.
Yeah. Where the Walmart. Yeah. Civilized town with a Walmart.
Yeah.
The Walmart.
Walmart don't come to East Bumblefuck.
No. No. Out here we have whatever it's called. The grocery.
Lidl. No futons there.
No.
Just the one that the manager sleeps on.
Yep, pretty much. Ugh.
Hey, Lidl, give me that sponsorship.
Yeah, right?
Do they have those in Cambodia?
Well, they... I don't know.
Let's get that going. Let's give that to Cambodia. They won't like us anymore.
Like the first Cambodian Lidl.
Mm-hmm.
And the manager's futon. We'll get them a nice manager's futon.
A very nice futon.
But you gotta sleep there. It's a rule.
Yep.
So my thoughts on this movie is the beginning was a bit heavy-handed. The very first time I saw it, I remember being like, oh, I'm not really feeling it early on. But the movie, as it went, I was just like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Like, it gets so good. It gets so tense. And you get that great factor in the Stephen King style of like thinky horror of who's the real monsters, the people that are trapped in there, or the actual factual monsters that are outside the grocery store.
I mean, those actual factual monsters are working together to accomplish a common goal.
Right. And really, it's just like an ecosystem we're not used to that right. We got trapped in. So it's like, whose fault is that? Not theirs.
It's not their fault.
Not at all.
They're just reacting how they normally react.
That's right. But when you're talking about just persecuting people because of beliefs and just murdering people for no reason whatsoever other than, you know, the large body of people think that's probably okay to do. It shows you kind of what's really scary and what isn't. It just does such a good job of all that. The creature effects are great. Canby Studios does the effects for this film. It is so good. It's so scary. It's so uncomfortable. The performances, like I said, start off a little like heavy-handed, and that may be just a little bit of the script kind of having to do a thing.
Right.
But everybody, Andre Bauer, Thomas Jane, everybody really gets into it.
And I'm sure they were reacting to tennis balls on sticks, right?
So I think,
that makes it a little more impressive.
For chunks of it, for sure, CG, but they did a lot of practical for this too, which is great.
That's good.
And Darabont was kind of basing a lot of what he was doing off of episodes of The Shield. A lot of the camera crew and everything came off The Shield.
I love The Shield.
And so they were just like, yeah, we can just run around with cameras and do whatever we want to do. Like, you tell us what to do, we'll run around with cameras. And like, he's like, but what about the other camera guy? Why aren't you going to say, no, it's not important. We'll get him out of there. It's just, we'll run around. Just let us do our thing. And he was loving it.
I'm sure, man.
So it's just like, so cool. Podcast. Just had crazy effects running through the middle of this grocery store set. Camera guys running around chasing them. It's like so crazy. And I think that Darabont just did an awesome job.
Now, was this a Stephen King short?
It was.
Okay, that's what I thought.
I think it's from the Skeleton Crew.
That sounds right.
I think that's correct.
There's an asterisk next to that fact. Yeah. But it might be right.
That's right. Fact check.
Fact check.
But yeah, awesome movie. There's a black and white version available on any of the physical media releases that is definitely worth your time, because I think it's even grittier and kind of sells the ambiance with the mist in the gray tones is so good.
That sounds good.
Yeah, very fun movie. Well, not really fun, but
so much fun. We're trapped in here. Oh, monsters.
And then of course the end of the movie is one of the most, like, I was stunned. Because I'd go amiss if we didn't talk about the end of the movie. I won't spoil it for people who have not seen The Mist, but I was gobsmacked
for those of you who have seen The Mist but have not read The Mist, different ending.
Mm-hmm. I know Darabont had worked with Stephen King, obviously, on Shawshank and things like that.
Right.
Green Mile. And when they were doing The Mist, he was like really nervous because he was presenting King with a different ending. And that's the first time he had really done that. And he's like, I think this is how it should end. And King looked at him all pissed off. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh no. And he's like, why didn't I write that? So it's like, that's awesome. And Darabont,
that's got to feel so good.
Yeah, exactly. And you can tell that they have a release. Like, who goes to Stephen King and be like, I'm going to change your writing and then go to him and do it. Like, a lot of times he doesn't care, right? Like, he sells rights to everything. So right. Like, do whatever. I got my paycheck.
Sure.
But him and Darabont have a relationship because Shawshank was one of the earlier big.
Huge.
Yeah. And still just one of the best of all time, I think, for adaptations of Stephen King.
It'll get on here eventually.
Yeah.
It's been a while. I need to rewatch it.
So good.
Yeah.
So scores, IMDb gives this 7.1 out of 10.
Okay.
Rotten Tomatoes critics, 147 critics give this 71%.
Oh, wow.
So just bingo bango, right in line with that. Audience, 198,398 of them, 65% for this one.
It's pretty definitive, I'd say.
I'd say, and I'm coming in higher than the rest.
Yeah.
8.0 out of 10, because this movie rocks.
That's great. Well, I'm going to change the kind of genre we're looking at. I'm doing a sport.
Ooh.
But a funny sport.
I've heard of those sports.
It's one of them sports with the ball, the foosballs. Hmm. It's Necessary Roughness.
I see.
From 1991. Have you seen this one?
I have not.
Okay. Well, this one is pretty awesome to go back and watch, because so many people are so young in this movie and they hadn't made it yet. And when I tell you some of the people in this, you'll be like, wow. I watched this on November 22nd of 2020. Hmm. It's an hour 48 comedy sport directed by Stan Dragati. Starring the Scat Bakula.
Scat Bakula.
Scat Bakula.
I love Scat Bakula.
Yeah, he's a little weirder than Scott.
Scat.
Hector Elizondo.
Oh, I love Hector Elizondo too.
And Robert Loggia.
Loggia,
that's
Robert Loggia. Yes, love him too.
Yeah,
that is
some classics.
That's some headliners right there.
And that's not even all of it.
Holy shit.
Due to the NCAA sanctions, the Texas State University Fightin' Armadillos must form a football team from their actual student body with no scholarships to help to play their football schedule.
Hmm.
So scandal happens and you need a bunch of scabs to fill in your football team.
Sure.
Scat Bakula is... Scat Bakula. He is like 40 or something in this, and he's essentially... He was a student. I believe his father got ill, so he left the school, and he ended up working on the ranch, and he just ended up staying on the ranch when his father passed.
Oh, cool.
So he was like star quarterback. Like, he had probably a future in the NFL, the whole nine.
Hmm.
When they make this team of scabs, they are trying to get him to come back to join the team and become their quarterback again, even though he's like 40. And this movie's just so much fun. Like, I thought it was gonna, I remembered it. I was like, ah, oh, it's gonna be a dumb movie, whatever.
But it's got Scat Bakula.
It's got Scat Bakula.
Okay.
Necessary fact, Max, this movie cast also includes Larry Miller, Rob Schneider.
Schneider.
Sinbad.
Okay.
Jason Bateman.
Ooh.
Kathy Ireland.
Wow.
Dick Butkus.
Ooh.
Roger Craig.
Okay.
Evander Holyfield.
What?
Jerry Rice.
Okay.
Herschel Walker and more.
Wow. Jerry Rice. One of my favorites.
Jerry Rice. Gotta love Jerry Rice. Yeah, there's a scene where they bring in, they're trying to teach them football. They really suck. They end up having to play a prison team. Mm-hmm. The prison team just consists of actual football players that just murder them.
That's pretty awesome.
It's pretty great. And Evander Holyfield, for some reason. Who's going to argue with him?
No, nobody. You get punched in the face.
This movie has a ton of actors that would go on to be names in film and TV. The team has no chance most of the season. The Dean, which is Larry Miller, goes out of his way to hurt the team the entire movie. He's just trying to ruin their odds.
Sure.
I forget what he gets out of it, but he's just like, I hate you guys, Blair. Let's fail.
Sounds like a Larry Miller role.
He's so scuzzy. It's a multi-layered underdog story where you have some bad players. You got Bakula being over 40. You have Kathy Ireland is their punter.
Oh, interesting.
She is a soccer player.
Huh.
And then they're just like, she's awesome. Let's bring her in.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, if she gets hit, it's just not good.
Right.
Is she going to shower? Like, it's like all those kind of thoughts.
That's cool.
But she's pretty good in it. This is an early acting role for her. And this is a comedy that feels 80s at times, like a Porky's or a Nerds kind of movie, because it adds in that little sprinkle of drama.
Sure.
The center, I forget which guy was the center, but it was the guy who played E. Honda in the Street Fighter. There's a bunch of Street Fighter people in here.
Okay.
Which is pretty, he's actually awesome in this.
That's great.
He's super good. He plays like the sweet, nice guy.
That's awesome.
Really good. So yeah, if you want a football movie that's just got that weird feel, like a Nerds movie, this is definitely it. And just see like Jason Bateman when he's like, I don't know, 20 or something in this movie. Like he's so young looking.
Coming off of Hogan's Family in the like mid to late 80s?
Probably. Yeah, that would have put him about there.
Yep.
So IMDb gives this movie a score of 6.2 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, the critics, 30 of them, gave it 33%.
I see.
The audience, 9,500 some odd people, gave it 46%.
Okay.
And me, you know me, I've fallen in line with IMDb. I gave it a 6.0.
Nice.
It's a fun, different kind of football movie.
Excellent.
You're excellent.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm also going to keep this in the realm of some sports.
Ooh, more sport?
Sports.
Go, sport, go.
2019's The Art of Self-Defense.
Hmm.
Yes, I watched this in the July of 2020.
Ah, the July. Blaze it, Sam.
1 hour, 44 minutes. It is a comedy drama directed by Riley Stern, starring Jesse Eisenberg, Imogen Poots, Alessandro Nivola.
That's actually four parts of their name. They're all hyphenated.
That's right. It's not. The summary. After being attacked on the street, a young man enlists at a local dojo led by a mysterious sensei in an effort to learn to defend himself from future attacks.
Interesting.
Yeah. It is a really excellent dark comedy.
Oh, okay. That I'm in.
Yes. And it's really fun to see Eisenberg kind of react to everything that's going on. He plays that kind of a little too tight-laced, a little, you know what I mean, like a little too kind of uncomfortable in social situations, but starts to kind of loosen up. And like you can tell he's kind of desperate after being attacked.
Sure. So it's him being uncomfortable in his own skin and he's learning to be a human besides just learning some self-defense.
Trying to loosen up, and the sensei is a little strange. Things are a little strange in the dojo.
What makes him mysterious?
He's a very cocksure,
okay.
But he also just, the way he does things are a little bit too extreme, and the things he's such like, this guy's a little off kilter. Okay. Like, he doesn't seem like he's all there. And things start to unfold through the movie, and you start to realize that things are a little bit deeper than you thought initially. And there's a lot of awkward humor, a lot of like, you know what I mean, like tense laughing, or you're just like, where like the scene will be really tense and it'll lead to something that's just like a little like, meh. Like, you know what I mean? You're just like, oh my God, seriously. Yeah. So it's a lot of good, like not quite laughs, but chuckles.
Sure.
At the movie, but it does a nice job of being tense and telling a good story overall. I thought, as far as, let me see here what I have about the director specific. He's really good at driving this tone of situations building up to not very much, which is very in line with life, where you like sometimes you think the most big, like I'm gonna talk to him, it's gonna be great, and it just completely is just like nothing. It's like mundane. So, yeah, sure, no problem. It's like I had a whole speech prepared. You know what I mean? Like he does a really nice job of this kind of dark, off-putting humor that just really, it's different than like the standard dark humor, but it's just got that kind of like mundane dryness to it and that everydayness that makes it feel very true to life and kind of makes you laugh in like a, like, yeah, I've been there, man, kind of way.
That's fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to watch.
As long as it's not too cringy, that's fun.
It was not, and it wasn't. That's what was nice about it. It wasn't like a Ben Stiller comedy where you're just like, Yeah, no, it was just kind of like that. Oh man. Like that kind of thing. It was a good, fun watch. Like, I didn't feel like that awkwardness in it at all. I'm glad you brought that up because it's a good point. IMDb gives us a 6.7 out of 10.
Okay.
Rotten Tomatoes critics, 164 critics watched this, which was a surprising for a littler indie movie. 84% from the critics. Audience, 631 of them, which if you just add two little dots is 63%. That's what they gave it. And I am kind of falling in the middle. Much like you falling in line with IMDb, I'm kind of that dart in the middle of the getting that good clustering, and I give it a 7 out of 10.
There you go, Cluster Max.
That's right. Quite enjoyable. Check that one out. It's just, it's so uniquely toned that it's worth your time for, like, you know, irrespective of how you feel about Jesse Eisenberg, I think it's worth the price of admission just to see how the director handles the tone of the film.
He can do good.
Yes.
He's just done some bad, too.
Agreed. Who hasn't?
Not me. Hi, Cambodia. Well, my last movie is an animated, but it's a CGI animated, so you're less interested. I'm sorry. And it was on Netflix, if that matters to anybody. I watched 2017's Woody Woodpecker. That's the guy.
Yeah.
That's the guy. I watched this on November 23rd, 2020. It's an hour 31 comedy family. I guess it's comedy.
Did you watch it with your family?
I put it on because my daughter was running around. I was like, let's watch something here, go.
Yeah.
And she was gone in 2 seconds. And my wife watched this with me, this whole movie.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, what is our daughter doing? She's playing with chainsaws.
Does that mean we get a wife score?
You're going to have a lot of wife scores coming up.
Oh, this is exciting.
You're even going to get some mother-in-law scores on some of these.
Holy crap.
Yeah, we've been watching a lot of movies together.
Wow.
And I will still, don't worry, people, I still pick bad ones. My mother-in-law loves bad movies, too.
Oh, that's great.
So. But this is a bad movie for another reason.
Oh.
Directed by Alex Zamm, starring Eric Bauza, Timothy Omelson, and Graham Verschaer?
Even he doesn't know.
He does. He's not completely sure. No one told him. Everybody died in a horrible accident, and he just doesn't know.
No.
Your movie summary from IMDb. The hyperactive redheaded bird enters a turf war with a big city lawyer wanting to tear down his home in an effort to build a house to flip.
I see.
Unnecessary fact. Eric Bauza will voice Bugs Bunny in Space Jam 2.
I see.
That's right.
Unnecessary indeed.
Very. I actually have two. Scott McNeil, who plays a redneck goon character, is the voice of Piccolo in Dragon Ball Z.
Hmm.
Which is very funny, because if you look at him, you're like, what a goofy looking person.
Huh.
I mean, in the movie.
It's because he's a Namekian.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. My bullet points. Put this on to watch with daughter. She was smart to abandon us.
Oh, my God.
Woody is wholly unlikable and annoying. The actors do an okay attempt to make a kids versus adult slapstick movie, but the script is super weak. Woody shits on multiple things in this movie.
He, like, actually takes a dump?
He shits on things.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a cool nod playing the old theme song while practicing for a battle of the bands.
That's cool.
This sucks. It teaches kids very little.
I see.
The CGI is fine for Woody and his effects, but this movie, like, kids movies, if you're going to reinvent this property, like, why did you make the character so unlikable? Woody is just a total prick.
Hmm.
I mean, he was always kind of a jerk.
Right, right.
But, like, he was, like, fighting loggers or, like, something like that. The main character and his family owns the land.
Yeah.
He's allowed to do whatever he wants on it.
Wow.
And it's just like, it's like, okay, he beats up some of the workers and stuff, but then it gets cringeworthy, and I'm like, why is this going on so long? Like, I don't care. None of this is good.
Wow.
This movie's terrible, and I'm not going to devote any more time to it. It's that bad.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I don't like it. But it doesn't get the worst score ever, so don't worry.
Okay.
Because it at least...
It does some stuff.
It knew it. It did a thing. There was at least a couple things.
Sure.
IMDb gave it a 4.1.
Okay.
Rotten Tomato critics, 8 of them, poor bastards, 13%. The audience, 213 people, 32%.
Yikes.
I gave it a 4.
Okay.
Because I think it tried and it had the right idea. It just did not execute it right.
Okay.
My wife gave it a 5.5. I don't know what's wrong with her.
Okay.
But she's seeking help.
Okay, good.
Yeah, because this movie crap.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry we ended on such a dour note, but go enjoy the rest of your day, everybody. Ha ha ha.